This episode of Foreplay is brought to you by the Barstool Golf Towels. We've got two of them. We've got the signature Barstool Golf Towel. It's real sharp. And then we've got the Saturdays Are for the Boys Golf Towel, which is also sharp. You can get that at store.barstool.com, barstoolsports.com. Store.barstoolsports.com.
Nailed it.
Get your golf towels. They're amazing.
Go get your golf towels. I believe that you can search now by your Foreplay.
Yep. When you're at the store, hit shop by podcasts Foreplay.
All right. Get your golf towels. You get your Barstool golf towels.
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Okay, Foreplay, episode 3. It is Genesis Open at Riviera Week. We have a phenomenal interview this week later in the episode with our old buddy Michael Breed. Second interaction with him. Great guy, a lot of energy.
That's what I was going to say. Awesome guy, a lot of energy. Tons of energy.
Really likes us. I think that we've really bonded with that guy. He's the man.
He really is. You never know, like the world-long drive, we had a good time with him. He was really nice to us. You never know if that's him just being like, all right, I'm going to entertain these goofballs. He was the same when we interviewed him as he was when we met him. It was awesome.
Couldn't be a more genuine dude. All of his enthusiasm for the game, very real. Everything you ask him, he's got all the numbers. He's got all kinds of theories and all kinds of, he can back it up, you know, with stats and knowledge and all that, and he cares a lot. So great interview with him at the end. We do got to begin with a little greenskeeping, formerly known as housekeeping, but someone, shout out to a listener who emailed us or DM'd us or tweeted us or something, and was like, hey, idiots, you should be calling housekeeping greenskeeping.
Pretty sad that we couldn't come up with that ourselves.
A little embarrassed, especially people would be stunned to know how much time we've put into the names for the other segments.
Yep.
Anyway, greenskeeping. Everybody remember, first of all, everybody's done a phenomenal job of going and leaving reviews.
Yep, we are. Yep, we are looking at them.
We're definitely looking at them. Review of the month wins a Barstool green jacket. Everybody is begging to know if we're going to sell those.
That's genuine, too. I've had DMs, people tweeting at me, when are they going on sale? When are they going on sale? They're not going on sale. You got to leave a review on iTunes, and we'll, if it's good enough, we'll pick you and we'll send you one.
That's the only way to get one. We're not selling them. Go leave a review. Again, they've been coming in very consistently all week since last episode went up. That's kept us in the top four for sports podcasts on planet Earth.
Yep.
All week. We were up to number two, I believe, just behind our boys, pardon my take. They had a huge week.
Yeah, they sure did.
So they keep killing it. Shout out to those guys. But yeah, everybody go keep leaving reviews. The best review, top review of the month wins a green jacket. That's the only way to get one. We are not selling them.
Not selling them. And while you're there, rate the podcast, subscribe to it, and tell your friends.
Tell all your friends. The other housekeeping issue, remember, we are a very communal podcast. Email us things that you do with your buddies, any ideas, any segment ideas, whatever the hell you got, foreplay@barstoolsports.com. Email us, email us, email us.
Yeah, send us stories. Send us questions, too. We'll take some questions about, like, what to do or when during a round of golf or whatever. We'll answer questions.
We had a couple last week that we implemented into the show that were just really funny questions. We had somebody who's helped us out with a couple of things gave us a question that we actually used for Willie Wilcox last episode on our rapid fire. So if you got questions, we love questions. I've laughed out loud at a few emails that people have sent. So we love keeping in touch. We love contacting or being contacted by the listeners and all that. So again, you keeping us up there, review, 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 win a green jacket. It's the only way to get one. That was greenskeeping. Trent, we're on to talking, recapping AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am week. Jordan Spieth, what do you got?
Jordan Spieth, you said it. You summed it up in one word. He dominated the tournament. So much so that, like, Sunday was boring.
Yeah, it was.
It sucks to say that because it's a golf podcast, and the people who don't watch golf be like, oh, golf's so boring. But when a guy dominates like that, and it's unlike last week we had Ben on who did not, like, step on the throat and take control of the tournament. Spieth is very, very good at that, and that's what he did, and it made for an uneventful Sunday.
Yeah, shout out to Ben on who I bet on, and then he collapsed and lost and totally sucked.
Right.
So that was sweet. But there was one moment on this past Sunday when Spieth had to get up and down. He hit it over the green. He had to get up and down on like 14 or something for par. And had he not, it would have been down to like a 2-shot lead or something like that. But other than that, you're right. It was just kind of a snooze fest, which is not to say it was boring or bad golf. Phenomenal golf from Spieth.
Unreal. When he plays like that, that's the old, that's 2015 Spieth, who can just, you don't know when he's going to stop. I saw him, he had a quote today where he's excited about getting that win, obviously, but it's just now, it's like a monkey off the back, and he can just let it rip and not have to worry about getting that first win out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, if you come into Sunday, you got a six-shot lead. He hit 60 out of 18 greens, no bogeys, two birdies, I believe, for a couple under. Ended up winning by three, more than that.
I don't remember what the final leaderboard looked like, but I
it was never close.
No,
and so Spieth is. It's nice to see that he's not like gone and done. And he did win in May after the Master collapse, I believe, last year. So you know, Spieth. He had the one little hiccup that everybody's going to remember, but I still think going to the Masters. I mean, he's hard not to fucking pick him.
He was the favorite gambling odds. He was the favorite going into that tournament, and now the odds are just ridiculous.
Interesting start to the week for Spieth, who had the incident with the professional autograph seeker people or whatever.
We're all on the same page in terms of autograph seekers, right? They're scum of the scum. Like, get a life. That's what he said. That's what Spieth said. And usually I hate when athletes will take the high horse or whatever that's supposed to say and be like, get a job. But with autograph seekers, it's 100% true.
Yeah, I did like their chirp, but they're like, you're not Tiger Woods, bro. Yeah. Kind of like that a little bit. But other than that, screw those guys. So Spieth had a little bit of, he had that whatever the hell you want to call it, controversy, answering questions about that at the beginning. Had a phenomenal week. Pebble Beach, like we predicted, I don't want to say predicted, but like we talked about and discussed and even wrote in our blogs, a lot of the coverage was going to be, you know, B-roll of the cliffs and the vista, and it was.
Jim Nantz, this is his time to shine. The Masters is his time to shine, but him talking about the rolling waves and the crashing seas, he just can't get enough of it.
You could tell how sad they were the first day when the conditions were just dog shit.
Yep.
And you couldn't see anything. I mean, they got a little bit better as the week went along, and then finally Sunday it was beautiful.
Yep.
And they were full steam ahead on all that type of crap Sunday, which, I mean, they had to be because the tournament was boring, but
to the point they showed so many waves and surfers and dogs running on the beach to the point where I hope they're like trolling us back. I would respect that. For people who actually wanted to see like real golf shots like ourselves, but if they were just like, we're going to show two straight minutes of waves, I'm okay with that in terms of a troll.
I don't hate it. And there are some people that get very frustrated, like, show more golf shots. You know, I don't really care.
Show me
the goddamn beach.
Yeah.
Love the beach.
When the tournament's like this, just show me the beach.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a little tighter and whatnot, but I really don't mind it. I kind of, especially when you're in the Northeast, it's like snowing. And I was in Boston for a really short trip to grab my car, and it was like snowing.
Yeah.
And I'm watching some of the coverage on my way home on my cell phone, and it's like beautiful vistas and all that. I was like, oh, okay.
It is one of those things where I talked a bunch of shit about it leading up like last week on the podcast. But then once I'm seeing the waves, I'm like, those fucking waves are awesome.
They're awesome. So awesome. So it's always a good week, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. We're going to hop into headlines. We're going to come back and talk about a couple of the celebrities at some point, once we do player feelings and all of that. Little teaser there, no big deal, professional podcasting. Headlines. We got Ernie Els, Donald Trump, and the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo playing golf together on, what was that, Saturday?
Let's see. Played golf today. Whatever February 11th was. I think that's Saturday.
Sounds like a Saturday. It was funny.
Okay.
It was funny because Ernie Els, he math lab producer robbed the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. For a little background story for those that don't know, intern who's now graduated to producer Rob, who's sitting right next to us staring at us as we tell this story, famously right before Christmas break texted me one day and was like, hey boss, I have a bunch of math homework to get done. Can I please have tomorrow off? I'm like, sure, no problem. So then the following day, he tweets at like 6 p.m., something like that. Hey, man, seeing Star Wars for the third time, can't believe it, something like that. And I was like, what the fuck? So I called him out for it. Turns out there's a big thing. He's like, I had to be at math lab, whatever. Anyway, Ernie Els kind of math labbed the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. He basically said, I have to withdraw with some sort of neck injury or something like that. Next day, he's playing golf with Trump.
Yeah, I've got the tweets here. This is Ernie Els. This was on February 7th. End of quote. Always love playing AT&T Pro-Am, so obviously really disappointed to have to withdraw due to neck injury. Wishing everyone at the PGA Tour a great week. And then, on February 11th, Donald Trump, President of the United States, if you didn't know, played golf today with Prime Minister Abe of Japan and the Big Easy, Ernie Els, and had a great time. Japan is very well represented.
Great tweet, by the way.
Great tweet.
Japan is very well represented.
Yeah, that's the first time I've read a Trump tweet out loud, and I don't know how to handle the exclamation point.
Yeah, I do it on the morning show occasionally, or if I hop on the Barstool radio show, and it's weird reading them out loud.
It is.
But yeah, Ernie, you know, you got to love the Big Easy. You kind of do whatever the fuck he wants.
Kind of in a weird move. I need more backstory. To me, Ernie Els is such a genuine, nice guy that I believe that he had a neck injury. And then did Trump just call him up and was like, hey, man, let's play some golf with the Prime Minister of Japan? And Ernie had no choice?
Yeah, it's almost like he Adam Banks did from Mighty Ducks when he woke up and the pain was gone.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to think about it, because Ernie is such a nice guy. And Trump clearly didn't think twice about putting Ernie on blast.
No, not at all. Big Easy, Ernie Els is out there with me. Also interesting, you wouldn't think that Ernie Els would be like the first guy in line to play golf with Donald Trump,
no.
President Trump.
That's true. It's just a weird. You know what was even weirder about it? It didn't even become a story.
No, nobody really cared.
I tweeted about it from the Foreplay account. Follow on Twitter at Foreplay Pod. But nobody. I thought it'd be a bigger story than it was, and it just wasn't.
It's now come out that it looks like the Japanese, many people are saying that the Japanese prime minister gave Trump an all-gold driver.
And I think I also read that he played with it.
Yeah, and he immediately put it in the bag, was like, oh yeah.
To me, that's one of those things that he gave that to him as a gift, and it was not to be played with, and Trump was like, I'm fucking playing with this.
Yeah, thing. It might have been like, you're supposed to like hang this in the Oval Office and like sign it or something, or have people sign it. No, Trump put it in the bag immediately, took out, you know, whatever the hell it was, like his Titleist or something like that. Yeah, so producer Rob's got a picture up right now of the Donald just swinging the gold driver on the range.
Just getting loose with it.
Definitely like a symbolic gift, and he just put that right in the bag. So, yeah, really interesting outing kind of all together. That was one of the top headlines. We got Bill Murray. Mm-hmm. He kind of snubbed the Golf Channel.
Weird moment for Bill Murray over the weekend, and I'm still not sure if we're at the bottom of it. I blogged it, and so here's what happened. Bill Murray is trying to be interviewed by the Golf Channel, and he keeps asking the interviewer, what is your cameraman's name? And the interviewer will not tell him, and Bill Murray keeps like scurrying around like a small child, avoiding the interview. About 10 minutes before this happened, Bill Murray he had just teed off. He's in the middle of the fairway, and the camera was trying to get real close to him, a Golf Channel camera, and he was in Bill's shot, or like in his vision. It was fucking with him.
Yep.
And he kind of bristly was like, can you move back? Like, is this your first time out here? That to me was the basis of why Bill Murray was mad at the cameraman afterwards. It has been brought to my attention that maybe he wanted to know the name of the cameraman, and the interviewer wouldn't tell him. So it was like, you don't know the name of your cameraman. I'm a common man. I'm going to run away. I don't know what it is, but it was a very awkward moment with Bill Murray, who is normally like...
Oh, so you think Bill Murray was trying to put like the interviewer on blast?
That's what people told me. When I blogged it, I mentioned the part where the cameraman was in his shot, and so I thought it was a carryover to afterwards where he was just like, I don't like this cameraman.
So Bill Murray was hitting him with like the you should know your cameraman's name, bro.
That's what,
in theory,
many or some people are saying.
Many people are saying.
But the main reason, so I don't know what to think. In my head, Bill Murray was being a dick.
Right.
And everyone is afraid to call Bill Murray a dick. They'll be like, and
he's untouchable.
Which drives me nuts, because especially at the AT&T Pro-Am, he can say anything to the gallery and they'll be like, oh my God, he just reinvented comedy.
They laugh out loud no matter what
he does. He just reinvented comedy. It's not only at Pebble Beach, he can do that anywhere. He's untouchable. But when he's a dick, people are still scared to write the headline like, Bill Murray was a dick. There were headlines of this event where it was like, Bill Murray's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. He's the greatest. He's untouchable, and it drives me a little crazy.
Like, those people are just regurgitating the same article every time this tournament comes up.
Right.
And that's frustrating because I don't know. I'm kind of over it for the most part. Love Bill Murray. And, you know, Caddyshack, all that. I mean, those are unbelievable golf moments and all that. But it's just kind of the same shtick. You're right. If he goes from, like, walking down the fairway to just skipping a little bit, everybody erupts.
Whoa,
and, like,
they're
laughter
ripping
and
their clothes off. They can't believe what's happening. And, again, he's a legend. It's fucking Bill Murray. But I feel like we're at a point now where saying he's Bill Murray is the reason why we can't rip on Bill Murray.
Our boy John Daly, Sunday, made back-to-back bogeys, withdrew from the tournament citing, I believe, back issues, and threw his putter into a lake.
Threw his putter into a lake, withdrew. Classic JD.
Yeah.
Love it. Love that he still got the fire. One big problem is no one got video of it.
Pretty unbelievable, really. I saw like one picture of it like floating upside down in a
That's
lake.
All there is.
What the hell is that?
The fact that there isn't a full-time cameraman following John Daly at all times is insane.
What kind of tournament are you putting on where there's someone that's more camera worthy than John Daly, especially after he makes two? It's not like he just randomly erupts. Like, he builds up to it. You know he's getting ready to do something crazy.
Especially if he goes bogey, bogey, and I guarantee you could see that he was getting agitated. I'm not saying they need to be like TV cameras there. We all have cell phones now.
Right, and it's like the old geezer tour. There's who the fuck are you watching out there beyond John Daly that they didn't get a camera on him? So that was the only thing that sucked. Everybody's rehashing the from Whistling Straits when he threw his iron into the lake, Lake Michigan.
Awesome moment.
Great video there. So you got to think there's some sort of similar video that just was never captured.
And you're right about them, John Daly being like the only person to watch. When I went to a senior tour event in Des Moines and Daly showed up, it was a huge deal.
Huge.
There were huge galleries. Nobody else was following anybody. It's crazy.
So, yeah, great. Another classic John Daly story just adds to all the lore. One that we just saw right before we started taping the show, Michelle Wee dropped her tabletop putting stance, actually Googled the Sergio Garcia and Phil Mickelson claw grip and is now implementing that.
I don't know if that's a good move by her.
A little sad because as ridiculous as the tabletop was, is great to watch. It's nothing better than watching someone with like the ridiculous tabletop stance and then just miss like a 2.5-footer.
Especially her, because she's like 6'3".
Yes.
So it's noticeable when she does it.
And like watching tall people in general like putt is like, it's just very like trivial looking, and like, look at that big person trying to get that small ball into that little hole.
Big person, tiny club, tiny ball, and it's just like, all right, here we go.
Exactly, and the visual is ridiculous, and so then you add the fact that she's like tabletopped over at 90 degrees trying to putt. It was electric. Anytime, like I said, she missed from like 2.5 feet, it was a whole production. Now she's onto the claw. I like that she had to Google it. You know, that's a little common man move there.
Yeah.
Common woman.
Her getting rid of it, that's Michelle Wee, obviously super famous in the golf world, but the tabletop stance was her calling card. Like, you knew that was her. That was her thing. Now it's just she's going to be a normal putting stance.
Yeah, 100%. So it's going to be tough to recognize her out there. Good luck to Michelle Wee. I've always kind of liked Michelle Wee.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Another Nike person, Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
WD from both these this week and next week at the Honda. You know, pretty much worst case imaginable fucking situation, basically.
We've been setting the bar every week was just don't withdraw, be healthy. You know, that went out the window in Dubai. You're thinking, all right, it's back spasms. That's the line they were feeding us. It's back spasms. It's not going to be long term. It's going to be fine. And then Tiger, hey, by the way, Eldrick, if you're listening, stop ruining our Fridays.
Yeah, he always drops on Fridays.
You were just shit-faced coming home from the bar, so
true.
It didn't really ruin your Friday. You got the news.
Mm-hmm.
But then he dropped this news again on a Friday where it's like, oh, by the way, I'm not playing in the next two tournaments. My comeback is in dire straits.
So I want to say it has something to do with like the withdrawal deadline.
I think it does.
Not that that really matters. But you're right. Just drop it on Thursday or something so we have time to recover, have a good Friday and all that. When he drops them on Friday, it's just the worst fucking news you can get. Friday's already like a slow news day in the blog world.
Yeah.
So you're grinding over content, trying to get work out, trying to make it look like you're a productive person at the end of the week. And then he hits you with that double fucking WD from Tiger.
Yeah. And he does it on purpose. It's why we're saying because it's slow news day and you do the Friday. He does it in the morning, but it's the Friday afternoon, Friday morning dump. So you got the whole weekend and you hope people forget about it. People aren't going to forget about this.
People don't forget. We're not going to bog down the whole show by talking about Tiger. He's not playing the next 2 weeks. That's it. We're over it. On to player feelings.
Okay.
Many people love player feelings.
Yeah, they do.
Bryson DeChambeau.
Oh,
we get tweets about this guy all the time.
Yeah.
Trent, I'm going to let you go first. What are your thoughts on Bryson DeChambeau?
I do not like him.
Okay.
And the reason I don't like him, it might not completely have to do with him, but it's how the media covers him. I don't like him in general because I think he does things for attention as opposed to actually trying to get better.
Really?
Well, now I don't know if I really feel that way. But I do think that he may have started getting coverage for the weird things that he does, and he liked that. Because it was all my irons are the same length, and that was covered wall to wall.
Gigantic coverage.
Ad nauseum. Now he's doing the side saddle putt putting stance, which is insane. Again, I'm not saying that he's doing it on purpose to get attention, but it definitely gets attention, and golf broadcasts cannot stop talking about him when he's doing something different. Oh, he's super smart. Oh, he's doing this different. He's doing that different. Make a cut. Make a couple cuts, maybe win a couple tournaments, and like that sort of shine is he deserves it.
So producer Rob doesn't necessarily watch a ton of golf, but he's obviously committed, starting to get into it. He looked at me last, like a week or two ago. He's like, who's that fucking guy putting from the side of the golf ball? That's Bryson DeChambeau. And Rob's like, I love that guy.
Oh, no.
So Rob's a huge Bryson DeChambeau guy.
I'm torn on him. I really am because I don't think it's totally his fault. But, man, it drives me insane that he gets covered when he doesn't play all that great.
I like him. Okay. I root for him big time. You know, it's hard to root for him big time when he's like, I don't know, he's nowhere to be found lately.
Yeah.
I don't even know where he's playing, what the hell he's doing, but I haven't seen his name. You know, it was Masters. It was last year when he was in contention Saturday and then tripled 18, I think.
Yep.
And kind of, you know, whatever, fell by the wayside, smell you later. But he, you know, I like that he's interesting. He's different. He's got all the clubs the same length thing is so wild. I can't even wrap my head around it. how the hell do you hit like a 60-degree wedge that's the same distance or the same length as like your driver or your four iron, whatever the hell his like standard length is. I don't even understand it. I don't get it. But that's why I like it.
That's why I don't like it.
He's got the scally cap game. You know, he's, you know, I don't know. He's unique. I guess you either, he's one of those guys I feel like you just kind of make a judgment call right out of the gate.
No doubt about it. I had to draw a line in the sand. It's either I'm all in on this guy and I love him and he's really interesting. He is good for the game in terms of eyeballs because people are like, what the fuck is going on over there?
Yep.
Or you got to be the other direction, which I have chosen, where it's just like, I want him to do well. So there's a reason for people to be talking about him.
So I tried the side saddle in my apartment like a week ago, two weeks ago maybe.
How'd it go?
I couldn't even make contact with the ball. I mean, it's bananas. It's like you can't even – I don't know how you hit it straight. The other thing, I don't know how you control, like, your distance control.
No idea.
Because you're just kind of, like, pooching at it. It's not
– He seems to do pretty well with it.
Yeah.
I've seen – of the replays that I've seen, he can bury him from deep with it. It's just – it looks so weird.
Yeah, it's crazy when he's got, like, a 10-footer and you see him – you're like, what's he do? Is he like curling? Like, what the hell is he doing? So it's definitely bizarre, but the other player feelings we have to cover are just celebrity golfers in general.
Yeah.
I made a comment about one, Justin Timberlake. Everybody loves JT. It's hard not to, but it's very frustrating that we always talk here at Barstool about how everything comes back to the mean.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never going to have it too good. You're never going to have, Justin Timberlake has it perfectly.
There is no mean for Justin Timberlake. It's just
his
up and
mean
up.
Is like over. It's like off the charts, and it never goes down. He's Justin fucking Timberlake. So you know,
in sync. What up?
Great looking dude, fire jam artist. He just produces fire jam after fire jam.
He can dance,
and then he's out there on the golf course. They keep showing him. He's like almost holing out on like the seventh hole, which is one of the more famous par threes in the whole world. He had like three different clips from Saturday or Sunday where he's spinning shots in right next to the hole, making birdies. So a little frustrating to like look at us and what we are. And he's out there. He's got it all, and he's not regressing back to any sort of mean.
Having sex with Jessica Biel?
Yep.
They're married, maybe?
He's got a phenomenal roster.
Britney Spears is on that roster. The only thing that he might not have going for him, but it doesn't matter when you're that famous, is like he's short.
Oh, is he?
I think he's short, right?
That feels good.
Producer Rob, get on that. See
that
how
feels really good, actually. Fuck yeah.
That was the only thing I could think.
He's 6'1".
Nope. I was wrong. He is 2 inches taller than I am.
That's devastating.
All musicians and entertainers and actors, whatever, they're all, to me, are like 5'7".
Well, if he's listed as 6'1", he's probably like 5'11".
But still, that's much taller than I thought he was going to be. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's kind of got it all. You got to wonder. If I was him, I'd be watching out because something bad's coming.
It's been too long. It's like Dave Portnoy. Things are just happening.
Yeah, you're right.
Good things are just happening.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. We had Carson Daly won the thing, the little amateur part of it. I don't really have anything to say about Carson Daly.
I have no strong opinions about Carson Daly except, like, shout out to those TRL days because those were fun.
Those were great when they used to have, like, Eminem on. It was kind of a crapshoot. Like, oh, what's he going to say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because he was a lightning rod before, you know, that was, like, a thing.
Big time. Absolute lightning rod.
TRL. That was awesome. That was in Times Square, correct?
Yeah.
They'd always have like the windows. Yep. You could look down at the fans.
Yeah, those were great. That was like when music videos were like all the rage.
The only problem with TRL was they would play like 30 seconds of a video and then go to the next one.
Teaser.
They wouldn't play the whole thing. Do you remember that? It was, drove me insane. Like, let me see the whole video.
It's like when you get some asshole at a party who takes over the playlist and he plays like a minute and a half of every song and then switches over right away. You're like, dude, like, let me enjoy the song.
Not to throw shade, but Office Manager Brett was doing that on like Saturday night.
Oh.
Oh, he does.
That guy's the worst. Not Brett. Like that person that does that.
So Brett.
So in this situation, Brett.
He does. Oh. He was playing. Brett was playing jams too. Brett's 22, mm-hmm. but he was playing songs from when we were in high school. And it was But he would play 45 seconds of it and be like, on to the next one.
Oh, that is so goddamn frustrating. But yeah, you're right. They used to do the same thing with the music videos.
I was like, how did we get here? How did we get to?
Yeah, me too. I was trying to draw the connection. I was like, where are we coming from here?
Yeah, so TRL, that's all I got on Carson Daly.
Yeah, that Boomer, you know, plays in it, Belichick. Boomer usually gets a lot more coverage. Maybe his game was just extra bad this year because they usually show him, like, you know, they usually show him snap hooking one into the water or something like that. They didn't really show him at all.
Yeah, I think Belichick might have taken those eyeballs of the old golfer because we were fresh off the Super Bowl. So, and there were a lot of no days off chance, which was funny.
A ton of no days off chance. A lot of videos, people that made me uncomfortable, actually, of people sending us videos of them like yelling at Belichick on the tee when they're like within 10 feet of him.
Yeah.
Those scare me.
They do?
Yeah, because Belichick's so intimidating. I can like feel him being just disapproving of the person yelling.
That's true. I didn't think about it
that way. Yeah, I get like secondhand embarrassment watching.
Yeah, I agree. Now I agree with you.
Yeah. All right, so next up, we got our interview, as we teased earlier, with our old pal, Michael Breed. Great interview. A lot of energy. Everybody enjoy this. Okay, we are joined. It's week three of the 4Play podcast. We are joined by our good friend, Michael Breed. Michael Breed is host of The Golf Fix on Golf Channel Monday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern. He's been doing that since 2009. Very electric show. He's also the director of instruction at Michael Breed Golf Academy at Trump Ferry Point in New York. Also host of A New Breed of Golf on Sirius XM Radio. 2012 PGA National Teacher of the Year. And will also be a part of the Drive, Chip, and Putt coverage. Sunday morning, I believe, April 2nd. Mr. Breed, how are you, sir?
I couldn't be any better, and thanks for the mister in front of that. I feel like I need to have a tie on.
Oh, yeah. We decided to come in hot with that. It's been a while.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I believe October at the World Long Drive is when we first met. We had a good time.
That's right.
Yeah, we were talking beforehand. You gave our good friend Trent a little bit of a hard time about his golf swing.
Well, I mean, listen, anybody that's seen that golf swing knows that there's a lot of reasons and there's a lot of opportunity to give that some nudge. That thing needs a little bit of help. We got to start getting him to get down and take some lessons down at Trump Golf Links. You bet.
I was gonna say, if I may quote, you said I could put my kids through college with all the time it would take to fix your golf swing.
That's exactly right. And by the way, they're 4 and 5, so we got a lot of time.
So we got plenty of time. Yeah, yeah. We were pulling quotes. You also said to him, he was like, "What's the number one tip you would give me?" And you said, "I would just take the club out of your hands and give a different sport to you."
Well, listen, you know, you got to have some passion, you've got to have some talent, but you also have to have some other things that are intangibles. I'm just not sure that Trent's quite developed yet. We got a little work to do.
So, World Long Drive, we had a great time. We were down there for 3 days covering it with you guys. Just kind of want to start with that a little bit. We were talking, I think a lot of people are just shocked by how far those guys can hit the ball, and we were curious, you know, what's the difference between how far those guys are hitting it and Rory McIlroy or DJ?
You know, it's an interesting thing. So, obviously, these are elite athletes. The guys that are standing there and creating these club head speeds and ball speeds that they are creating, they're elite athletes, and they train incredibly hard. Tim Burke works as hard at that profession as a Rory McIlroy does or Jason Day. I mean, and so their number one goal is to get the golf ball and the club to go as fast as it possibly can go. That is a different requirement for a Rory McIlroy or a Jordan Spieth or Jason Day. Those guys, they want it to go far, but they also want it to go where they want it to go. They want it to go consistently in a certain direction. Yeah. And so if Rory decided that he was going to go at it as hard as he could – he could increase his club head speed a little bit more. It wouldn't approach the speeds that these guys get. So give you an idea. Say a Rory McIlroy or a Bubba Watson, they may get a club head speed that'll go, you know, in the high 120s, somewhere between, say, 126 and 129. And the long drive guys are going to get 20 miles an hour faster than that even, which is just hard to think about. Now, the other thing that they're doing is they're using equipment that's a little bit different. Rory's using – the guys on tour are typically using a driver that's about 45 inches in length.
Okay.
With lofts that are probably around 7 or 8 degrees. The guys on the long drive, they're using drivers that are, you know, quite a bit longer, 47 inches in length, and probably, you know, somewhere between 2 and 4 degrees of loft on the driver. So when you start dealing with the equipment that these guys are dealing with, that's all to maximize the distance. They're going to hit up on it. They're going to change their technique. They're going to use the ground a lot more forcefully. It's a completely different. It's almost like the difference, you know, between a weightlifter trying to max out their weight and a football player trying to get a certain number of reps.
Yeah,
it's just a different philosophy.
We played our pro-am with Jeff Flagg, who won a few years ago, and he gave us his driver to use off the tee a few times, and you should have seen Trent and I trying to get that thing in play.
I can only imagine. And by the way, Jeff is a very, very talented player, and his golf swing is a little bit more conventional. When he won, you know, he hit a golf ball that I think the distance was in the 366s with the wind in the face, and he kind of flighted it down and did some, you know, some strategy, real strategy with what he was doing with his shot. But, you know, the typical distance that you're going to hit a golf ball at to get to win one of those long drives is going to be in the 420s to 430s, something along those lines.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will be surprised. I think Jeff and a handful of the guys that we met there were college baseball players and that type. So those guys are very athletic.
Absolutely.
So we're going to dig into your history a little bit. You were the assistant pro at Augusta National from 1990 to 92. Just give us kind of a breakdown of what your duties on a day-to-day basis were like there.
You know, it varied during the course of the year. Obviously, you know, Masters is a big event, and that's always the first full week of April. We started preparing for that right at the start of the year, you know, right around the 1st of January was when we started going in and receiving all the merchandise and pricing it and displaying it and doing all that to prepare for that week. But after Masters, there was a little cleanup, but primarily, you know, we were golf professionals and making sure that the members and their guests who arrived at Augusta National were treated the way, you know, we would all expect and want to be treated. From making sure that there was available time on the golf course, as well as lessons and servicing them in the pro shop, all kinds of different things.
So
go ahead.
So we got to ask, because we're big story guys. In 92, Freddie Couples wins. Is there any story from that type of week? Because Freddie Couples has to be one of the biggest fan favorites of all time.
You know, it was interesting. So there was a woman that worked at the club with me named Susan Tallman. And on that week, she was a big Freddie Couples fan. And Paul Marchand, who was Freddie's coach, is a very good friend of mine. And so she wanted to meet Freddie. So I asked Paul if he could, on his way to the first tee on Thursday, just walk through the golf shop and say hi to Susan. And he did.
Wow.
And then we obviously congratulated Susan on her good luck charm and that ball up on the bank on 12. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, I could see her really being like, well, I guess I have to be at every tournament now because I'm the good luck charm.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
So just to get into, we want to talk about the golf fix a little bit.
Okay.
First of all, what do you do with all of the gadgets that you use?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I spend a lot of time going to all kinds of different stores trying to find things that are everyday, I'll use the word loosely, appliances, everyday things that people can get their hands on readily that they can use to assist them with improving the game, whether it's a swim noodle or PVC pipe or whatever it is. My goal is to try to come up with something that somebody can use or somebody might have at their house. If you've raised kids, you're going to have a floaty for them so that, you know, that when they go swimming that they're safe. I'm going to figure out how I can take an object that somebody might have at their house and show them how they can use that to learn how to play the game a little bit better. We've used a Lazy Susan, which is one of those things that sits on your dining room table that spins around so you can get the salt or pepper a little bit easier. We've used that to explain to people how a golf club comes through a ball and creates spin. It's everything I can do to take what people would most typically have around their home and show them how they can use that to assist them with putting better or pitching better or making a fuller swing or a more consistent motion in their game. And then, you know, we got to a point where when we first started the show, I had a little bench that I put some stuff on. I probably had four or five things that we would put on this. And then through time, I ended up getting so many of these things that we had to build a toy box. And now we're at a point where the toy box that we have is too small. And I'm trying to convince these guys on a daily basis, hey, we need to build a bigger box here because I've got more stuff that I'm trying to get in there that we just don't have room for.
Well, I will literally get, I'll get like a call from my mom sometimes on Monday night and she'll be like, I'm looking at your dad. He's got like a towel around his neck. He's watching the golf fix, talking about how Michael Breed's fixing his swing. And I'm like, all right, Dad.
It's so funny. And the pictures that I get sent to me with people that are wearing, you know, these Happy Harry devices, which are for, you know, 3 and 4 year old kids to get into. It's like a little donut that they get into when they go swimming so they don't go underwater. And these people are going out to the range and they're swinging with this. The number of swim noodles that are out on driving ranges these days is probably 5,000 fold from what it was back in 2009. It's incredible what we've been able to do and obviously in helping people try to improve. Your father is just one of the many people that has found the golf fix a funny place and an enjoyable place to learn to play the game and have taken some of the ideas out to the range. It's great fun to see.
Yeah, you know on the range who if there's a golf fix fan or not out on the range. You
That's
know
exactly
immediately.
Right. That's exactly right.
So sort of in the same vein, we've branded ourselves this podcast as sort of a common man golfer, which works great with you. If you had one piece of advice, we've got a lot of probably 15 to 20 handicap guys. If you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be? Just what would it be?
You know, it's an interesting thing. So, you know, obviously people that are watching the show, listening to your podcast, or even listening to my radio show, A New Breed of Golf, they are avid golfers. Even though they're 15, 20 handicap players, they really love the game and they want to understand the game.
Can't get enough of it.
They can't get enough. And so what happens is that they're reading, watching, listening.
We had slight technical difficulties for one moment. No big deal. We're right back to the interview.
Of golf is understanding how to control the club face. And as you make a swing, if you're always aware of what's going on with the club face, you're going to be a better player. Many people are trying to figure out what's going on with the club shaft. Should it be on plane? Am I taking it inside? I'm taking it too abruptly, whatever. That's all important. But the loss of control of the club face is the most important or is the greatest reason why people are struggling with their game. And so if you start with, how can I get control over the face? If the ball's going to the right, the face is over to the right. How can I get the face more to the left? Whether you're right or left-handed, simply put, if the ball's going to the right, the face is over to the right. How can I get the face more to the left? Maybe it's my grip. Maybe it's what I'm doing in the backswing to try to get the club face in a position that allows me to get the club face more to the left. Whatever it is you can do, if you can always pay attention to what's going on with the club face, first and foremost. And then the second thing is understanding how to get the club to bottom out, what we call bottom out, or impact the ground in the right spot. Many people are hitting the ground before they hit the ball. Why are they doing that? What are the things that they can do to teach themselves how to get the club to impact the ground at the golf ball or in front of the golf ball? And through repetitions in swing and understanding how to use different appliances, I use a wine rack dryer or a wine glass dryer to show people how to do that. A fly swatter I'll use to do that.
Of course you do.
But getting that's what everybody has.
Right, of course. It's perfect.
Right. And so if you can figure out how to avoid the fly swatter or wine rack and impact the ground in front of that, you'll teach yourself, hey, this is what I have to do in order for me to get the club to bottom out where I want it to bottom out. And when you control the club face and you get the club to bottom out properly, now all of a sudden you're going to have a chance to improve your game and play a little bit more consistent golf.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that because I think a lot of people look at the swings of, you know, a lot of the top guys and they look at, oh my God, look at what Rory's hips are doing or something. They really forget about, no, it's about where the club face is pointing and kind of where you're bottoming out and making contact with the golf ball.
Well, and then the other thing, too, is this, and this is the part that I always find funny. They're standing on the range and they will listen to somebody tell them what they need to do, and that somebody has no idea what they're doing with a golf club.
I'm sure that drives you crazy.
I mean, well, it makes me laugh. I will tell people, do you go to your plumber when you have a cavity? Obviously not. But yet, I'll go to my plumber when I've got a problem with my golf swing. I'm gonna go ask the doctor if what's wrong with my backswing. Like, they know. They don't know. Stop asking friends or people that you don't even know what's going on with your golf swing. It's not going to help. You're never going to get better that way.
Right.
You're just going to get more confused.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. And we've all been in around, you know, with somebody who's given these types of lessons and that. And you're like, all right, buddy, just relax.
Right. And the other thing is they're going to tell you what helps them. They're going to say, oh, you know what? I read this tip or I listened to this or I was listening to the podcast. And all of a sudden somebody said, yeah, you have to take your right butt cheek and sink it more over your heel. And all of a sudden that helped. And the next thing you know, somebody that's got the club in a terrible position is thinking about something that is not going to help them play better golf. But they're going to listen to that individual and then say, oh, these guys don't know what they're talking about. I'm not going to take a golf lesson. Go take a golf lesson.
So
go just the same way. As, you know what? You break a leg, right? You go and you break a leg. What do? You go to a doctor. You don't go to, you know, somebody who's running the hardware store and go, hey, does this look right to you? No.
So
you don't do that.
So on that point, we, you know, we have a ton of people ask us, like I said, we're kind of the podcast for the common golfer, the guy that goes through the same types of qualms, who's obsessed with the game, wondering what the hell he can do. Everybody always asks, you know, are lessons worth it, et cetera, et cetera. So if someone in their local town says, all right, I'm going to make the commitment, I'm going to take a lesson, where do they start? I feel like it's like trying to find a doctor. I mean, where do you find, how do you begin to research the right guy you should go to or girl?
Well, and you used the proper word, research. So the first thing I would tell you is, and look, I tell people every week, go see a PGA professional. I really believe that PGA professionals, and I'm involved in the training of PGA professionals, they are very talented men and women that are thinking every single day, what can I do? How can I develop the skills to help people play better golf? So that's the first thing. You got to seek a PGA professional. But to your point, it's research. So all the studies show that when people are going to buy a product of whatever it is, that 92% of those people will get on the internet and they will research it and they will find out who is the individual or where's the store that I need to go to find this. Typically, it's Amazon, but whatever. You're typically
big
going
Amazon
to
guy here.
All these things. Exactly. We all are.
Amazon Prime, totally worth
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I love Amazon Prime. This is not a plug. By the way, Amazon Prime, if you want to advertise with us, give us a call.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place to get a new set of tires. It's an awful place to get a golf lesson. But what I can tell you is that you have to start with the internet. So what you would do is you would just go in and type in PGA professionals and in whatever town or area, whatever it is that you know, let's just say it's within a 30-mile radius of where you are. And then you go and you research it and you'll boil it down to, you know, two or three people that you're going to go to. And then what you do is you pick up the phone and you call them and you say, hey, my name is so-and-so and I'm interested in getting a golf lesson. And tell me about what you do with golf lessons. How do you teach people? What are the fundamentals that you do when it comes to giving a golf lesson? Now, The reason why that's an important thing is that you're gonna get an understanding of the individual that you're working with, or that you're talking to, that you're potentially going to work with. And they're going to say to you, you know what, I've worked with this person, I've worked with this person, and I developed this talent, and I got this guy to college, and I got this girl to the LPGA tour or whatever. And all of a sudden you're going to go, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then you'll go and take a golf lesson and evaluate that experience. Was it a good experience? Did I like what I was taught? Was it too complicated? Was it pretty simple to understand? Do they have a plan for me? Did they tell me that, you know what, you're going to do this when you do this practice drill for, 3 hours a week and come and see me in, 2 weeks. And here's what we're going to do with your swing. I'm going to change this, then I'm going to change this, then I'm going to change this, because these are the cause and these are the effects of what's happening with your swing. And this is what's happening with the golf ball. And all of a sudden you'll go, you know what? I've got some direction. I trust this person. Because ultimately what happens when you take a golf lesson, you have to develop a trust for the person that you're going to go see, much like a doctor. You go to a doctor, and there will be word of mouth, obviously, that will help you with all this. But when you go to a doctor, ultimately, you have to trust that individual. And if you don't trust them, you will never fully commit to what's going on. They're going to say, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning. And you're going to go, you know what? I only need to take 1 aspirin and
right.
Blah, right? What you have to do is you have to develop the trust with your coach. And that, to me, is one of the most important things. So what I would tell you is do the research, make a phone call, and develop that trust knowing that you've got direction and where you're headed. And when you do all that, you will find the person that will help you improve your golf game. And then the game becomes much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I decided last spring to take some lessons, and the biggest thing was I could take a lesson and I could go out on the course and play and then bounce things back off of that person and actually kind of have an understanding for like, oh, I might not be able to necessarily fix it right now, but I have like some sort of concept of the idea of why the hell that's happening.
Yeah.
Well, and the truth of the matter is that in this sport, unlike other sports, in this sport, you're going to do the majority of your playing without your coach.
Right.
And because you can move the golf club, you're going to think you know what's going on. And so you might as well have a really good idea. Go see somebody that can tell you, here, when the ball went here, this is what you do to make the ball go that way. Or this is what you're doing that makes the ball go in this direction.
Yeah, Hank Haney always says golf is what the ball does.
It's exactly right. And ultimately, the ball does what the club face does. So for me, control the face and you control the golf ball. It's as simple as that. Hank and I are very much in the same camp with that. I think Hank and Jim McLean, I think David Ledbetter, Butch Harmon is one of, if not my favorite coaches. But those guys, they're all doing exactly what we're all doing, which is they look at the golf ball and they go, oh, the golf ball went over there. The only difference between those guys and you is they know why the golf ball went over there and you think you know why the golf ball went over there. That's a big difference.
And at the end of the day, we have no clue why the ball went over there.
Right.
You guys are making me want to take lessons.
Trent, that's the smartest thing you've said in a long time.
I tell you, it's the smartest thing I've heard him say.
So you're obviously a titleist guy. We have a lot of people that ask all the time, what's the main difference in a golf ball? So my question is, if someone, let's say somebody's a 10 handicap or something like that, and they're going to play, a titleist, brand new titleist Pro V1 all year versus, a velocity or a less expensive type ball, how much is that really going to impact their game over the course of the year? Because it impacts, the amount of money people have to spend.
So here's what I would tell you. I love this question. And for a variety of reasons. One, I know that in order to play the game of golf, you need a golf ball.
Right.
I know that. Right. And so you're going to spend a certain amount on a dozen golf balls. Let's just say that the low end, you're going to spend $24. And at the high end, you buy a Pro V or Pro V1X, you're going to spend $48. Everybody looks at it like, I'm going to spend $50 to play. I'm going to spend $50 for a dozen balls. I'm not going to spend $50. And what I try to tell people is you got to spend money to play. You got to spend money on the golf ball. all you're doing is you're spending an additional $24. That's right. It's an additional $24.
Yep.
And so by the time the year is over, let's just say for the sake of argument that you go through simple math. Let's say you go through 10 dozen golf balls in a year. If you go through 10 dozen golf balls in a year, you're talking about an additional $240. Now, I don't tell people what to do with their money, and I can't tell you what is a lot of money versus not a lot of money. But to me, it's just an additional $240. Now, is that $240 worth your enjoyment? And I'll get to the enjoyment part of this in a second.
Okay.
But to me, I always answer, absolutely. And the reason why is this. If you just go to the putting green and take the putting statistics on the PGA Tour. So the putting statistics on the PGA Tour are as follows. If you stand over a 6-foot putt on the PGA Tour, you will make that putt. On average, you're going to make that putt about 65% of the time. If you have a 10-foot putt, you're going to make that putt about 35% of the time.
Interesting.
And if you get to where you've got a 20-foot putt on tour, you're going to make that putt about 18% of the time. So now, let's just say for the sake of argument that you're able to get your golf ball to 6 feet instead of 10 feet. You're going to make in that 3 more putts in every 10 putts. And those 3 putts, for somebody that doesn't hit a lot of greens, if you can get your chip shot to stop closer to the hole, you're going to shoot a lower score. And it's a simple thing. Now imagine being able to get it to 10 feet versus getting it to 20 feet. Well, what happens is when you play a golf ball that doesn't spin, that golf ball isn't going to be closer to the hole.
Right.
All the tests show that golf balls that spin a little bit more end up closer to the hole than golf balls that don't. And Pro V1s are going to spin a lot more than a golf ball of any other variety, whether you're talking about one that you found in the woods or one that was given to you by somebody else, or even for that matter, if you get a Pro V versus an NXT, the Pro V1 is going to spin a little bit more. And that doesn't mean the NXT isn't going to spin. It's just not going to spin as much as a Pro V1. And so first you start with what golf ball you're going to be able to get closer to the hole. The second thing is that for the most part, the average person doesn't generate a lot of clubhead speed.
Right.
And if you don't generate a lot of clubhead speed, you need a golf ball that's going to spin more to keep the ball in the air. People look at golf balls from a standpoint of, well, I don't deserve to hit the golf ball. I don't deserve to spend that kind of money on a golf ball because my game doesn't warrant.
I think a lot of people look at it that way for sure.
Yeah. And my response is no, you need a golf ball that spins more. When I was teaching players back in the time when there was the Bellotta golf ball, the Titleist Bellotta golf ball,
old school
392s, 332s, whatever, those golf balls spun a lot. I made sure that all my slow clubhead speed players played that golf ball because that golf ball would go higher in the air. And if it goes higher in the air, it's going to carry farther. And if it carries farther, it's going to go farther. Because what happens to a lot of players is they can't carry the rough. They don't have the clubhead speed to carry the water hazard. And so they take out a bad ball and they hit it, and that bad ball goes into the water hazard, right? And what I tell them all the time is you need to play a golf ball that spins more so that that ball that spins a little more will stay in the air a little bit more. Now, for me, those are all the reasons why I think the Pro V1 is the golf ball that universally people should play. I get that there's an expense to it. I totally understand that. And for me, at that point, what I would be looking at is I would go to the ball that spins the most that you can afford. If it's the Pro V1, great. If it's the NXT Tour, great. Whatever it is that you have to do to get more spin on your golf ball, you will shoot lower scores with a golf ball that has more spin.
Well, I think you may have just convinced me to go out and buy a million Pro Vs.
That's my goal.
That was a hell of a
shoot lower scores.
That was a hell of a pitch, but I think you're right. I think a lot of people look at it as, you know, I'm not good enough to care what kind of golf ball I use. Like, who cares?
That's what they say. They say I'm not good enough to get fit for my clubs. No, actually, you have to get fit right. for clubs. You're not good enough to be able to play with anything. And the same thing is true with the golf ball. You have to, as a poor player, you have to take every advantage you possibly can in order to shoot lower scores. That's what all the manufacturers are trying to do. They're trying to figure out how can we get the player that has the least amount of ability to have the most amount of fun. And so they spend all their time trying to develop golf clubs and develop golf balls so that you can play a better round of golf when you're playing not as good a level of golf. And that's what it's all about. And even at the highest level, guys, I can tell you this, at the highest level, the game of golf is not about how good their good shot is. The game of golf is how bad is their bad shot.
Right.
And in this game of golf, when you have to play your foul ball, you're going to have to play the golf ball in bad places. And players that miss the ball better, miss their shots in better places, shoot lower scores than players that miss their ball in worse places. It's just as simple as that.
Well, we appreciate that. I think a lot of people find that really interesting, and everybody should go out and buy, like I said. At the end of the day, it is true, $240 over the course of a year when you're spending X amount on golf really isn't the end of the world. I'm sure most people can afford that, and you got to use a golf ball anyways.
And that, by the way, guys, is if you're going through 10 dozen golf balls a
right,
year.
Right,
which, you know, most people aren't going to go through that. If you go through, you know, 6 dozen golf balls a year, now all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, not even $150. I mean, it's right around $150, $160. It's not a lot.
Right.
It really isn't.
Absolutely. And you got to use something, so it makes sense. All right. So we
are. You got to use a ball.
Yeah, you got to have a ball, otherwise you can't really play. All right.
Kind of tough.
Last thing, while we've got you, we always close with rapid fire.
Yeah, I love this. Let's go.
We just have a couple questions. Trent, do you want to start it out?
Sure, I can start it out. First rapid fire question. Who's worst famous person swing besides Charles Barkley?
Wait. Worst famous swing? You mean the most famous worst swing?
Yeah, there you go.
Other than Charles Barkley?
Well, just let's phrase it this way. like the worst swing besides Charles Barkley of someone who's like we would know who they are.
I would say this is a very simple one. If you go to the bathroom and you look in the mirror, you're going to see it, Trent.
Wow.
I didn't see that coming.
Wow. I didn't either. I was like, what's he
wearing? Never quite goes the way you think it's going to go, does it?
It's like, do we have a poster in the bathroom? What's he talking about?
Just go look at yourself in the mirror. Just go to the bathroom, look at yourself in the mirror, and you're going to see yourself.
I'll take that. You're not wrong.
Next one.
Thank you.
Have you ever killed an animal in the course of play on the golf course?
No, I have not killed an animal, but I will tell you this. The very first professional tournament I ever played in, I actually won it.
Congrats, by the way.
Thank you. On the 11th hole, I was playing a par 3, and I hit an 8-iron that flew up and went right through a bird's wing. Now, the bird continued to fly. I saw the hole in the bird's wing, and the ball ended up about 12 feet from the hole. So And then I ended up making a birdie, right? So I got a birdie and made a birdie all at the same time. It was awesome.
That's fantastic. I like that.
All right. Last rapid fire question for you. Who is the worst golfer at Golf Channel?
The worst golfer at Golf Channel. That's a really interesting question. I would love to say that I knew the answer to that one. I'm going to say the worst golfer at Golf Channel that I know is... he's not going to like this.
I say, don't be political.
I'm not going to be politically correct here. But the guy that shoots the highest scores of the people that I know at Golf Channel happens to be my producer, Jeremy Garrison. We call him J Dog. You might hear me refer to him.
J Dog.
But he's getting better. Now that doesn't mean he's a bad player. It just means the people that I know at Golf Channel, you know, they're all shooting in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And J-Dog right now is sort of shooting in the high 80s to 90s, working on the game, and the game's getting better. But as he said to me yesterday when we were shooting the fix, he told me, he goes, you know, my goal is to get to the range and practice. I haven't been able to get to the range in 2 weeks because he's been so busy. So that would be what I would tell you. He's not a bad player. He's just the worst player of the people that I know at Golf Channel.
Fair enough.
You got a little political with it. You framed it very nicely, so well done.
Thank you very much. I like my job at Golf Channel. I don't want to lose it.
That's smart. That's smart. Well, thank you. We really, really appreciate it. Just to remind everybody, the Golf Fix, Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Phenomenal show. A lot of energy, a lot of high energy. Also, Director of Instruction, Michael Breed Golf Academy at Trump Ferry Point in New York. Host of A New Breed of Golf on Sirius XM Radio. So, Michael Breed, we really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Anytime. I love coming on the show. Love your energy, and congratulations on all your success as well.
Thank you. Keep it up with the show. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael.
You bet.
All right. That was Michael Breed. Great interview.
Great interview.
Tons of energy, as we said. Gotta love that dude. Don't think that'll be the last time we're hearing from him.
No. We'll probably have him back at some point.
On to everybody's favorite segment. People can't get enough of this. We get a billion emails about from the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, if you are emailing from the gallery, three-putt variations. If your buddy doesn't hit the ball past the ladies' tees, he's got to pull his dick out, that type of stuff. Pretty common, pretty cliche.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of that. Appreciate people sending stuff in, but we've gotten a lot of that.
Gotten a lot of that, so try to be creative. Try to, if you don't have something creative, then come up with something. But some of those are a little bland, so we're getting a lot of those, though. We really appreciate the emails. But again, try to spice it up.
Yep.
Speaking of spicing it up, animal killings was hot last week.
Much bigger hit than I thought it was going to be.
We got endless disturbing tweets and emails at us from people of just pictures of like geese with like their heads exploded off
just
on the
with
golf
feathers everywhere.
Feathers everywhere.
That was the most jarring thing. Is it wasn't, you know, people send in, you know, crazy stories like you'll never believe that this happened to my brother's friend's cousin, whatever. We got pictures.
Yes.
We got pictures of dead animals in my DMs.
Like nonstop. So the quick background for those, just a refresher. The from the gallery last week was the guy that said him and his buddies have a rule: if you kill an animal during the course of play, while you're playing golf, you have to instantly eat that animal. He said it hadn't happened yet, but you never know. So then we had a quick conversation, being like, "Yeah, it's never happened. I don't know." And then all of a sudden, it just happened to like everyone else.
I very much thought when we were like, "Yeah, it didn't happen to me," I'd be surprised if it happened to other people. Dead wrong.
Yeah, just a lot of disturbing things. So I didn't
Riggs
expect
is just-
that. I really didn't expect that. A lot of wild stories, like a couple of people saying, "Yeah, like I hit, you know, my buddy hit a low worm burner off the tee, hit like a duck. The duck didn't die, but it was like bleeding, and then it like swam around in a circle in the pond and slowly drowned." And I'm just like, we got like 100 of those.
We did. In theory, we should have thought about it. It's just sheer numbers. So yeah. A lot of people play a lot of golf. A lot of the time. So you're bound to hit a lot of animals. Never happened to us personally, but it has happened to some people.
Yeah, a little theoretical physics for anything that can't happen will happen. Clearly it does, and it has. I don't know if that's really called theoretical physics, but that was talking science here on the golf podcast. We do have a couple people, like we said, sent in a bunch of stories. This guy Clayton sent in a pretty interesting one that's related to animal killings. He said, "So I'm dating this girl. She tells me she wants to go play a round of golf with me. We head out to the course. A few holes in, on the right side of the fairway, about 250 yards away, is a deer. She tells me that if I hit the deer, she will have sex with me somewhere on the golf course. I'm not a good golfer at all. After losing 6 balls trying to hit the deer, it finally ran away. Didn't get sex on the course that day, but I married her this past October, and we regularly have sex on the course."
All right, Clayton.
Good for Clayton.
Good for you.
Yeah, this is a win-win story here. Happy for him, feel-good story. It's true. I mean, if a girl says that to you, you're basically going to exhaust all resources.
Yep.
Until you either hit the deer or you just fail.
You hit as many balls as you have in the bag. Maybe you even go buy a few more. You just got to keep trying.
Which kudos to her for being like, "Hey, this guy's trying to hit the deer. Like, I respect the shit out of that just because he can't do it. He's not that great of a golfer."
Yeah, I'm still going to have regular sex with him in the future when we're married.
So good for him.
Great way to start out a relationship, I think. Maybe not.
They're married.
Doesn't matter.
So it's Valentine's Day. You and I are not married, so what the hell do we know?
That's true.
Rob's not fucking married. 18-year-old Rob.
Took a sad turn.
Yeah.
Took a sad turn.
Sorry about that. We've had a disturbing, sad turn at the end of the show here.
Yeah, with dead animals. All right, then I've got another story that somebody sent in of a dead animal. This is from Aubrey, and it's pretty fucked up. When I was 10, I was playing with a... Sorry, let me get so I can read this. When I was 10, a kid I was playing with hit a gopher in the back with his driver, paralyzing it. We called the pro shop, who then got animal control involved. Animal control recommended we go ahead and put it out of its misery. Our pro hammered 3 nails into a board and made the kid kill the gopher as punishment. Can't make this shit up. It was the funniest, most traumatizing thing I've seen in my life.
So do you think they just, like, stabbed it with the 3 nails from the board, or did they hang it on the like, what did they do?
Here's the let's backtrack a little bit. I think I read this wrong the first time, or when I read it in my head, it says hit a gopher in the back of the head with his driver. It's not drive, it's driver. Did he just fucking lump this thing?
This is Aubrey's fucked up.
Aubrey's friend is fucked up.
It's his friend?
Yeah, this is, yeah, her friend? I was a kid. Yeah, I don't know if it's a guy or a girl.
Jesus.
When I was a kid, yeah, 10 years old, hit it with the driver. I'm hoping he accidentally added an R there, and it's drive. And
we got some very kind of messed up people that listen to the podcast.
I like them. It's a good crowd, but they're crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you're attacking a gopher with your driver, hitting it in the back of the head, and then impaling it with 3 nails that you nailed into a board.
That's insane.
That's, I mean, it's just a round of golf. Like, Jesus Christ.
Wild. Two wild stories. Two of many, of way too many.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's just pump the brakes, maybe.
I think Riggs is about to throw up.
Submissions, for Christ's sake. It's just a friendly, you know, family-friendly golf show. So, a new submission we got from Christian. Remember, everybody, email foreplay@barstoolsports.com. Send your from the galleries to us. Christian says, along with tosses and many other rules, my friends and I have, quote, skippies. If you hit a ball, skips across the water, and lands back into play, it's a free shot. For example, if you skippy the tee shot on a par 3 and it lands on the green, you're putting for an ace. High risk, high reward. I love it.
Pretty good.
I've definitely, you know, at Augusta on 16, they do where they skip the shots.
Yep.
Across, crowd goes wild and all of that. But the element where you get a free shot is, it's a nice little wrinkle.
It is a nice little wrinkle. I will say I don't like the par 3 part. I don't like where you're putting for an ace. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's a little cheap. Maybe you should just do it on par 5 or something like that.
Yeah, any other hole other than a par 3s, I'm good with. I like it, though. Skipping balls across is fun.
Sounds fun. It is high risk, high reward. I could see a lot of drama in that. You know, it starts to skip towards the end of the pond, and if it goes over, you're in great shape. If it doesn't, you're fucked.
Very much one of those things where when you're drunk, you just want to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that comes out back 9
back
on
like 9.
Saturday round out there with your crew.
Yeah, back 9. That's a back 9 thing. I like it, though. Skipping the ball, fun.
Yep, skippies. So go enjoy your skippies out there. Don't hate that. So to wrap up, this is Genesis Open at Riviera Week.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite golfer, Bubba Watson, defending champ.
Boo.
Huge field this week. A lot of big names. We were going through kind of looking at some of the favorites this week. We've got DJ, we've got Hideki, we've got Sergio, Jordan, Justin Rose in the field, Adam Scott, Jimmy Furyk. Defending champ, your favorite golfer, Bubba Watson. Big names.
Yeah.
Obviously, Rory's still injured. But, Riviera, you know what I mean? What are you thinking, Trent?
I think it'll be more competitive than last week. That's what I'm looking for. I know Spieth ran away the tournament. It was fine to watch. But with this many, like, big guns playing, it's like you said, the field is unbelievable. So if we can get, you know, a packed leaderboard on Sunday, that's really all I'm asking for.
Yeah, we got I got a guy on Twitter who DMs me all the time about betting. I'm not going to give him a ton of credit, but I will say he said watch out for guys that hit the long ball this week.
Okay.
So
okay.
Just if you're, you know, take it or leave it, folks. Yeah. If you hit the ball far, you might have an advantage this week. Sad the Tiger's not in.
Yep. Yeah, no Rory, no Tiger, less drama there. But like I said, we're living in the like a pretty great age of young golfers. The fucking field is packed. It's going to be a good tournament.
We are. A lot of big names. I could see DJ winning this week. He had a top. He was up there maybe second or third last week.
No, he was tied. I don't even know.
He was up there. DJ had a solid finish. So obviously DJ's always playing well. Hits the ball far, which, as we know, insider tip, big advantage.
Yep.
Everybody,
yeah, your DM guy.
DM guy told me that's a huge advantage. So everybody, enjoy the coverage. We will see you next week. Don't be afraid to leave a review. Top review wins a green jacket on iTunes. 5-star reviews are especially welcome. That's greenskeeping/housekeeping/
the end of the podcast.
Hit it hard.
I hit it hard, man. So far, man.